It is awesome to be back. You just tuned in to Set for Success with your host, me, Richard Lannan. We're going to continue our journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, career, or life. And you know how we're going to do it? We're going to do it through chatting with one person at a time to uncover their lives, people's lives, their business, their journey, their successes, so you too can create the success that you deserve. And I tell you right now, you do deserve to be successful in life, in your business, in your relationships, whatever it might be. It's the time for Set for Success quote. A hero is an ordinary individual who finds the strength to persevere and endure in spite of the overwhelming obstacles. Now that's from Christopher Reed. And Christopher Reed, if you don't remember who Christopher Reed is or you're not too sure who they are, Christopher Reed was, I think he was made famous by being the original Superman in the Superman movie. When I was a teenager, I was asked by my brother-in-law who were my heroes. And I looked at him sort of like he was nuts and asked him, what do you mean? He told me that he grew up with a generation of heroes, that his generation had heroes in comic books, the military, socially, and politically. There were all sorts of people to look up to admire, and maybe to be like or just a little bit like. I never really understood why he asked that question, but at the time I was a young boy, I was a teenager, and I lived a broken life where there was lots of family turmoil, and at school I had bad teachers, and the very fabric of social and political system had challenges. I saw a lot of abuse, injustice, deceit, and lies everywhere. You could say that that was my attitude at the time. But still, as a teenager, I will say I did have sort of a fun life, if you know what I mean. I have since learned that there are many heroes everywhere, individuals for whom have unique superpowers. The fireman or person who rushes into the scene, dashes into a building and saves a person's life. The boss who understands the importance of developing people's abilities, not for the business end in itself, but because it's the right thing to do. Or how about the parent or parents who raise or raises their children to be outstanding contributing members of society? I have learned on this journey of helping business and people to be set for success that there are many heroes in life. Heck, you could be sitting one right next to one right now and not even know it. I came across my first guest, or my guest today, Alvin Law, about 14 years ago through an organization called CAPS, the Canadian Association of Professional Speakers. You can say we became friends. And when I first started chatting with him, he surprised me. And you got to stay into the show to find out why he surprised me. That's the key. So I will say that in my eyes, I got to know Alvin and he became one of my heroes. With that, Alvin, it is great that you agreed to be on Set for Success today. Welcome to the show.
Goodness, I'm blushing.
You're blushing. Good. Good. I can't see you because you're off in like Saskatchewan somewhere, aren't you?
Yeah, I live in Calgary, Richard, but, you know, because of our success, I'll just start out with that. We treat ourselves to things. I work for a couple of goals, and those are my downtime. So We have a cottage on a lake called Crystal Lake in Saskatchewan. It's just north of Yorkton. I grew up in Yorkton. My family's been coming out to this lake since the 30s. So Darlene, my wife, and I drove 11 hours from Calgary yesterday to be out here for the summer, and it's a stunning, beautiful place. But you know why I love it here, Richard? It reminds me of all the dreams I had when I was a kid.
Sure.
You know, looking out at the lake and hoping someday I'd be successful as a little boy. And who knew? So here we are. Knew.
You know, I share that with you in a different way. I'm a big motorcycle fanatic buff. And there's nothing that I like better than being on a motorcycle in the summertime, riding down the highway in the prairies, in the huge, big open field areas, just feeling the air and the blue skies and the great openness of this part of our country. And it really does bring me back to my childhood. You know, it's the same idea. I remember running around the woods and on trails, pretending we were making the noises of motorcycles when I was a kid. And so I get it from a very different experience, right? So, yeah, very, very different.
We all have to have something that reminds us of why we're human, right?
Why we're human and what brings us in the moment itself. With that, you know, Alvin, you and I were talking before we kicked off the show, and I always start off with the very first question. And I was saying, you know, never really tell my listeners or our listeners the bio of the individual I have on the show, because I always think it's better when people talk about their own lives. So why don't we actually kick off right there and sort of say, you know, Alvin, just tell us a little bit about yourself, beside the fact you're from Saskatchewan originally and you love the big blue open skies and the cottage.
I was And you know what? I always tell this. It is an essential part of my story.
Sure.
It's a really long story, so I'm going to give you the elevator speech, we like to call it.
You got 2 minutes.
I was one of Canada's first thalidomide babies, and thalidomide was the morning sickness medication given to pregnant women back in the late 50s and early 60s when we thought it was okay. Well, we learned it wasn't because it deformed thousands of babies all over the world, and I was born, as I mentioned, in Yorkton, Saskatchewan in the summer of 1960, and I have no arms. So that is what has defined my entire being. You know, whether you like it or not, that's who I am. But the good news story is what comes after that. You know, everyone says, oh, that's so sad. Well, you know, there's all kinds of sad stories out there. We know people out there that are listening right now probably have their own. I like to joke, Richard, and sometimes people take this the wrong way, but this is not a competition. It's not about who's had the lousiest life wins, okay?
No.
It's what happens to you and what you do back.
You know, it's interesting you would say that because I was in my monologue, and you and I, again, I want to make sure the listeners know this. You and I talked about this before we kicked off the show. I might actually say some things on the show, words or not, that might today not be considered politically correct, and I want you to correct me.
Yep.
On this. But
sure.
but I mentioned in my monologue, you know, one of the first times I met you, I was just sitting at a table and we were sort of talking and everything along this lines, not really thinking, you know, to be honest, arms, legs, you know, heads, toes, knees and toes or whatever the song goes. And
yeah.
and I had one of those moments where in life, it's like, you know, should you stare? Should you look? Because you picked up a glass or a cup or something with your foot. And I was amazed. I was sitting there going like, oh, my gosh. Wow. How do you do that? And again, if that sounds inappropriate for me to say that, but like, how does somebody who's experienced your life learn those kind of skills, I guess? Maybe that's my question.
I was taught those skills by remarkable parents. Again, this is a long story, and
sure,
I don't
sure,
want to get too detail oriented. But you know, I should be in a movie, seriously, and that's not arrogant. But not only was I born without arms, by 5 days of age, I was homeless.
Okay.
My birth family chose not to take me home. So that's a very important part of the dialogue with our conversation even today, Richard, because I've always been able to see this in retrospect and look at what could have happened because I have that luxury. Because I was given away, I then had nowhere to live, so that automatically in Canada and in Saskatchewan, in this case, puts you into the foster care system. I was placed in a foster home in Yorkton, but ironically, or maybe fatefully, the foster home I ended up in was a different kind of place. They couldn't put me in a place that would look at my skills as a young person because I was a baby. So my foster mom did it actually as a bit of a grandma. She would look after babies that were given up, and she would keep them for maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks and then give them to someone adopting. Well, nobody wanted to adopt me, so I stayed with the laws. But why that was important, Richard, is they were in their mid-50s when they took me home, so they had wisdom.
Yeah,
they recognized that whatever you wanted to call what I had, whatever you wanted to describe it as, they knew one thing, that it was going to be extremely important not to use that as a crutch or as an excuse. So as much as I was able to learn to use my feet,
yeah,
it was the mindset that went with the idea that I did not have a disability, I wasn't crippled, I wasn't handicapped. Those are all dialogue issues that I know a lot of people are very uncomfortable knowing what the right one is. I can tell you simply this.
So let me,
It's an individual thing. Whatever each individual is comfortable with the expression you want to use, that's how it's going to work. Some people are not comfortable at all even talking about this. So that's why it's a really hard thing to nail down for everybody.
So with that in mind, why don't we take a short break? And when we come back, we'll talk about that discomfort or uncomfortable nature that people have. And I'd like to share you my experience a little bit about getting to know you a bit. And just on a different side, maybe some hurdles that I had to get over just in sort of getting to know you. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Elvin Law. And if you heard the first segment, I've known Elvin for about 14 years. And we were talking a bit about his life and the situation that he found himself in, I guess, at birth, Elvin. I mean, that's the best way to put it. And we were talking a little bit about discomfort, uncomfort, or choice of words when people first meet you that might actually come to mind. Can we speak about that a little bit more?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead. Go for it, man.
Well, I think, you know, I use an expression in my work, Richard, and it's usually all this work that I do as a speaker is all about trying to plant notions and ideas using common thoughts that we already have.
Sure, and that's
There's
why I wanted to
share. We've heard 1,000 times that first impressions are everything. Well, I'm one of those people that disagrees. because the first impression people have of me is one of sympathy. And I understand that, because having no arms is not something you're going to celebrate. But why I mention that is we're a very visually oriented society. And even in successful circles, people say, well, it's how you dress, it's what you drive, it's where you live. I don't disagree with those things either. The trouble is most of the most successful people I've met in my life didn't look like they were successful. They had come up with an idea. They didn't necessarily wear a $1,000 suit or $500 shoes. They were all about the internals, you know, the inside of us, how we think, how we perceive, what we set as our goals. And quite frankly, when you're born without arms, you're starting at an interesting point. You're starting with an already set of challenges that you had no choice over. So once you overcome the basics of those, that's how come the foot usage becomes so automatic. But I think what also happens is you haven't had to adjust to anything. This is how you were born. This is your life. It's different if you're a wounded warrior or somebody injured in an accident where you end up, say, in a wheelchair. That's a totally different scenario because now your life has shifted to a different category. My category was the same right from the beginning. So in my upbringing, I was taught you're going to get looked at, you're going to get stared at, people are going to notice you. Just try to be noble, try to be honorable, and remember that most people do not have any experience with this at all.
Yeah, and I think that's probably part of the challenge when it comes into being an individual, born with your particular situation. So even I'm trying to find out what words to use. So there you go. I do find that it's a little strange. Like, if you don't mind, I want to share a story with you. And it's one that you and I were hanging out in your kitchen and you were having a whole bunch of guests over and it was an event that you're hosting and we were by the refrigerator. And there are certain expressions that we say all the time. And you were pouring something for somebody and there was this woman next to us, and I remember it so well. And you and I were just carrying on like we're just two guys hanging out, having a conversation. And I said an everyday expression, do you need a hand? And the woman next to me smacked me and looked at me and like, what would you say that for? And I'm like, I'm hanging out with my friend Alvin. I mean, what do you mean? And then it dawned on me just the literal translation, but it wasn't meant to be that way. I guess it's meant to be figuratively, I guess that's the appropriate word. It's just an expression that we use. And your response to me was, yes, I'd love a hand.
I often will say, two, please.
Two, yeah, there you go, right?
Richard, I've got a great sense of humor, and that was instilled in me by not only my parents, but my friends.
Okay.
I think, to be quite blunt about this, and I really never, ever intend to offend anybody, I think society is getting a little bit too serious about itself. I know there's a lot of bad things that are going on, yada, 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 but at the end of the day, I think it's up to us to realize that not just a sense of humor, but a sense of comfort with ourselves is going to be an essential part of how people deal with us. And a lot of times, attitude is something that's very personal. But I've always viewed it in such a way that the lighter I can be regarding my way of being, the easier it is for people to adjust to me, and then they get to meet the real Alvin.
That's it. And I was just thinking about what you were saying there, because the easier, I guess you use the words, easier the people adjust or get to know Alvin, is that now opportunities for you to educate or speak into people's lives? Because you mentioned about being a speaker.
Yeah, it's really funny, and I'm not trying to be clever with this comment. I say that I've been speaking about my condition ever since I had a voice, because my mom would say things like, people would say, what happened to your little boy? And she would say, well, go ask him. He's got a voice. And that's how I started. I started just being, a typical, precocious child about it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I've been educating people my entire life, but not with the intention, per se, in the early years. I decided to become a speaker, not just in the field of disability. That's frankly the irony of my story, is that I've used my so-called challenges as an example of for others, how we can overcome our challenges, how we can overcome our obstacles, that no human being is immune. And you have to admit it, Richard, when you're sitting there, whether it's in an audience watching me or in a conversation one-on-one, this idea of no arms is very captivating at first. But what I also find happens to people is they almost turn the mirror on themselves. And again, I don't want to be offensive to people, but people make excuses all the time. And when they see me, they kind of go, well, maybe I should make less excuses.
No, that's actually a really good point, because don't we always make excuses for things?
It's human nature.
It is human nature. I often joke in some of my speaking, that I do that too. I use different expressions that my dad used to use, like just for now, right? And that would just drive me nuts, right? Or I'll just put this here just for now. Well, that 2 weeks later when you go back, that thing that they put there just for now is still there.
In other words, you haven't dealt with it. One more thing on that, too, is that we there's real life excuses where, you know, we've got a scenario or a situation that is genuinely, debilitating, or it's handicapping, or it puts us in an awkward spot, or you know, relegates us into a place that we don't want to be comfortable with. Bad things happen to good people.
Yeah.
But that's how we respond that counts.
Yeah, and this is what we do. It's interesting you would say that, because you and I have talked about disabilities, but we've also talked about chronic illness in our past and everything too. And so, you know, a bit of my history. And I once had a professional come up to me and say, people like you, Richard, usually struggle with things that happen because you've always been through your life, you know, very healthy. You have not had anything else happen to you that would may change the circumstances of your life. But now listening to you speak about it, I can hear that, you know, if you're born with the situation, then now it is a situation where you just learn to live and adapt. I don't know if it's adapt to or just make
I've
it
actually,
work.
I've had to adapt to my environment.
Yes.
Versus adapting to my having no arms. My having no arms is my natural state.
Yes.
So, you know, you mentioned I was in my kitchen pouring a drink or something. I have to adapt in my kitchen.
Yes.
So I don't change my kitchen because people come over to visit. My wife doesn't need adapting. She's not handicapped. So I adapt by using a stool so I can sit so where my feet become the same level
that's
as a
right.
person would with their hands. So,
that's right.
And by the way, you don't resent having to adapt. I think that's the other thing, is people get upset about how they have to change their life because something bad happens. Well, like I said, bad things happen, and you have to adapt in so many ways. But more than anything, you have to accept that it happens to everybody in one form or another. I like to look at people and say, you can see my handicap, but you can't see everybody's. I mean, you can relate to that, right?
Yeah, I can in another way. We're going to take another break, but when we come back, Alvin, I think we'll talk a little bit about your life today and what's happening, because you did mention about being in a relationship. I'd like to hear a bit about that. It's Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Alvin Law, and as you know, Alvin and I have known each other for 14 years, and we were talking a little bit about his life and his journey. Now, Alvin, you mentioned a little bit about your relationship. I know Darlene. I believe that is the name of your wife, is it not?
Yeah, it is.
And you guys have been together how long? Like you guys have been together for quite a while.
We have our 25th wedding anniversary coming up on July the 2nd, Richard. We got married in 1993.
Okay.
I met Darlene in 1991. I was a single dad of a 5-year-old. Boy from my first marriage. That was actually a harder challenge in my life to raise him than it was ever having no arms. And Darlene actually is my business partner. She has been running our operations. Believe it or not, we're successful enough to have operations. She runs our operations. We're partners in life and in business, and she shares the same vision as I share, which is really a good thing. Although at the same time, she is my staunchest critic. So it's like having a really good partnership in life and in business.
She's your staunchest critic. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm laughing because I know Darlene a little.
Knew her, you know, a lot of people think that, I'm going to say this out loud. I hope, again, nobody gets upset by what I just said. But, you know, a lot of people would look at Darlene and say, God, you're an attractive woman. You're smart. You're educated. You have experience in human relations or human resources. You know, she worked for a fertilizer company for a long time. Why would you settle down?
Hello?
Arms. Well, again, that's part of the perceptions, you know. She just doesn't see that I've got no arms. She knows that there's certain things that she has to do that I might not be able to do, but in fact, that's why our relationship works so well.
You know what? Can I talk about you and driving?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I mean, you know what? It just popped in my head. By the way, I think it's wonderful. I've met Darlene. She's a wonderful individual. Every time I meet her, she just makes me feel so welcome. And there's been times I've been in large crowds. Believe it or not, Alvin, I'm actually privately, I'm a very quiet guy. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't really go to crowds a lot. I tend, you know, most people think that I'm out there all the time. And whenever I'm with, like, I remember I was with a crowd of like 50 or 100 people, and she singled me out. I saw her single me out, walk over to me, and carry on a conversation with me. And I thought, wow, that was really nice. Right.
When I first spotted her, it was her smile that got me. And she's one of those people that has a natural smile But what I love about her the most is she's got a big laugh.
You might have heard
her laugh.
Yes.
When she laughs, everybody stops and goes, huh. And that's just loving life, right?
Yeah.
That's all a part of it. That sounds cheesy, but that's what makes us tick every day, Richard, is we don't look at what we don't have. We consider with great gratitude what we do.
Yeah. I appreciate that. I think that's a good statement. I was talking to you about cars. So I understand you drive.
Yeah, there's a perfect example of what I referred to earlier. My father, in this case, was a mechanic. He could have easily adapted a vehicle for me with, controls for my feet. But he was more about, you're going to adapt to drive a regular car, Alvin, because you know what? You don't need the hassle of having to fix a car up every time you want to get something. Even more importantly, I rent cars because of my work as a speaker, right? I don't get a driver. I don't take a bus. I don't do cabs because they don't stop when you put your foot in the air. But I rent cars. I steer with my right foot on the wheel and my left foot on the gas, and all I need is automatic transmission, and I can drive any car. So, yes, that's another one of those things when people see me, it's like, you don't see that every day. Exactly. Thank God.
Yeah, there you go. Now, the only reason why I bring this up, because I've watched a video of you driving and talking, and I think maybe it's still on your website, maybe not. I don't know if you still have that one.
Yes.
And the other one is, I remember I was sitting around having coffee with a group of friends, and you were there, and one of them stood up and said, have you ever been in a car driving with Alvin in downtown Toronto? I said, that's an experience. Right?
Yeah.
And
I've driven all over the world. I've even driven in downtown central London, England. And people say, you've done that? Yeah, I think it's fun.
Yeah, I know. But they were talking about the style of driver you were, too, right? It wasn't so much of with the additional aspect that you don't have the arms, that you're doing it with your feet and everything. But the conversation was not more about that. It was more about the style of driving, like a Canadian driver, right? If I can put it into context, right? Like just driving like everyday people, but maybe a little bit more edgy. it was a great
conversation. Well, and to be honest, this is going to sound really weird. I'm very, very impatient with lousy drivers because I figure if I can drive a car with one foot on the wheel, and you're driving with both hands, what's your excuse?
Well, there you go, right? You know, thalidomide, we were talking a little bit about that. Maybe you can give us a bit more of a description of that. You mentioned that it was a drug that was administered, was it back in the 60s? Is that correct?
In the late 1950s, pharmaceutical industry was just in its infancy all over the world. And a German drug company, there's a long story behind that one too, they came up with a formula that they decided was so safe that anybody, including pregnant women, could take it. And in their trials, which was just basically one-on-one trials, there wasn't a big lab set up, they discovered that it was miraculous in curing morning sickness.
Okay.
The trouble is they didn't bother to think about what would happen to the babies. So when it was banned in 1962, it had already deformed over 20,000 babies in various forms, missing legs, missing arms, missing fingers. It all depended on the human being. So each individual would have been very specifically different on their own. But again, it's not to put a positive spin on that at all, but to say, I always like to suggest that the bigger victims in this whole story were not the babies, they were the moms, because
the moms
had to face the truth of what they did.
Yeah. You know what? That's actually a really good point. Because how do you face, even if they didn't do it? Okay, so let me explain this to you, this, because that's going to sound controversial, right? But you're going to feel like you're responsible because, a lot of people go to the doctors and they say, well, we have this drug, right? And I'm not knocking the medical system or anything, but they'll say, well, we need you to take this to fix this particular problem. And people just do it without questioning it, right? And at that point in time, I guess, you probably wouldn't be knowledgeable in it, but there'd be a whole generation that would actually just follow what the doctor's orders are, and then that's it, and then
absolutely. And I think the other thing is, this was a long time ago before we knew what drugs could do to you.
Yes.
I mean, we look back at a lot of things, Richard, and wonder and shake our heads and go, why did we do that?
Because
it was then, and now it's now. And ironically, this is, I think, really fascinating to me, because there were no regulations before thalidomide created a world conversation in the health and pharmaceutical industry that created the infancy of the standards they would then use to define what was safe drugs. And those standards have expanded. But how many pregnant women nowadays don't think, geez, don't take any drugs? Exactly. Well, we learned that actually because of thalidomide.
Okay. So out of, if you're okay with me saying this, so out of something that was not good, something good became of it, per se, for the future generations.
Yeah, you know what? That happens in pretty much everything, Richard. It's how we look at it that makes the difference. And I know that sugarcoats a few things, but, you know, that's how I think. So what I was raised to believe is not meant to annoy people because I sound perfect. I'm far from perfect. Mm. But you can't live your life blaming, being angry, you know, being hostile towards unfair conditions. That's just the way humanity works. There's a lot of unfair things that are going on every single day. We read about them in the press, and they're there for a reason. We need to reflect on life.
Yeah, but I think it basically comes down to the old expression, just before we take our break, hindsight's 20/20. I'm sorry to simplify it that way, but you know, in many respects, it's almost like you're telling the story of hindsight. We didn't know what we didn't know, but when we did figure it out and everything, we made some changes, you know. This is Richard Lanin for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hey, we're here. We're back. Set for Success. But you know that already. Last segment, you know, we were just chatting and I closed with the concept or thought of hindsight's 20/20. I mean, how many times in our lives, whether it's in our personal lives, whether it's in our business lives, that we've made a decision and only 5 years later or 10 years later, we've said to ourselves, well, you know, I should have went into a different direction on that. You know, and that's on a personal life. But take that a bit bigger, you know, and in terms of something that actually impacts the social fabric or the political fabric or the economic fabric of our country, and impacts everybody's daily lives. Happens all the time. Now, Alvin, you and I were chatting, obviously, about your very unique circumstances and situations that you've been sharing with us and how you didn't say you adapt, you sort of grew up with it, and you've turned it into a business for yourself.
I did.
Yes, and tell us about I guess the startings and the success of your business.
You know, it's a big great question. Parallel, Richard. It would be comparing my story to a wannabe musician.
Okay.
All right, you've got a talent for something. You didn't realize you were really good at something. All of a sudden, you have people saying, "Play that song for me. Play that song for me." People wanted to hear my stories. So I actually started off in radio, believe it or not. I was a DJ in Saskatchewan. I went to college in Mount Royal in Calgary and became a broadcaster. The broadcasting component was simply because it was a logical decision that would affect my career that I did not have a lot of choices over. All right, I like to joke that with being a foot user, I probably wouldn't have made a very good dentist. So when I went into
you know, you'd probably make a really good one.
Yeah, well, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? Yeah. But, you know, using your voice.
Yeah.
But when I realized I had a voice, I realized I had a story, then I realized, you know, there's a lot of knowledge that's required in the world, especially for school students. So when the International Year of Disabled Persons came along in 1981, I started going out and talking to kids as a DJ, as a personality in Saskatchewan, and I eventually quit that job to do it full-time because I realized I could go out and speak to schools about not disability awareness, which is how it started, but about the connection between my disability and attitude. And it just became an enterprise that has lasted 36 years. Can you believe that?
That's amazing, 36 years, because I know people that go into the speaking business. And you know what? I think the number that have lasted that long is very small, right?
And I'm completely aware of that. And by the way, I don't think I get work solely based on the idea of the fact that I have no arms. In fact, to be honest, it is a very difficult marketing problem that we have because a lot of clients aren't sure. How do we fit that into our thing? How do we talk about this with our people? Well, it's not about talking about any specific industry. It's talking about the human inside the professional, which I like to think is a commonality we all have. So whatever message I'm giving about my having no arms, it's congruent with the idea that in companies and organizations, we have such an incredible amount of diversity in our communities these days, in our companies. Diversity is not just about color or about religion or even about disability. Diversity is just about humanity. That's what we are on planet Earth. And when best companies reflect the best diversity, not because it's politically correct, but because it's just a smart business decision.
It's interesting you would say that because I was having this conversation yesterday. One of the things I do a lot of international work. I work with a lot of international students and international professionals. So often in my room, I have like a mixed group of people. And we were talking about the importance of I'm going to use the word cosmopolitan. We're talking about the importance of being a cosmopolitan to be successful in our lives. And I think there's a lot to be said for that, that understanding the unique differences within people to create our own similarities. You know,
and I worked in Uganda, just as an example of that. I'm not bragging about that. Yeah. And I was intimidated by the idea that I was the only white guy in the room when I realized it's not about being white or black. It's about what we share in common.
Yeah, and that's actually a very good point because I can share this with you in common because I know I just finished up with a group yesterday and I had 30 people in a room. I was one of three white people in the room. And you know, but again, it was no big deal because we were all coming from the perspective of humanity, right? We're all coming from the perspective that we are humans and all there for a reason to learn and to learn from one another. And so it was a very interesting experience. So I think it's awesome that you've actually created a business on that particular point. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
It's real simple. Just alvinlaw.com. Alvin like the chipmunks, law like the police, alvinlaw.com.
Yeah, nice and simple. What's the future hold for you?
You know, I think what I'm finding is it's been a bit of a challenge in the last couple of years in my business model, and that's because I think what's going on is we've been reevaluating in the speaking industry what denotes a professional speaker. You know, we've had all these TED Talks. They're just fine. We've had, you know, people that have lost their jobs as CEOs becoming consultants and speakers. They're all just fine. But I like to tell people I am a professional speaker, so I will continue to do that. I'll just be the professional, whatever I've got to do to continue to spread my message. But more than anything, you know, I think just to fulfill the idea of what I believe my mom told me, and that is, Alvin, you were born to be a teacher. So that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Fair enough. You know, I was asked that the other day, too. And you know, I've had the privilege of having a 30-year career in the consulting industry. And
wow.
People look at me and they go, really? Yeah, I started 25 years ago, literally almost like this year. 30 years ago, sorry, this year. And as an analyst, as a research analyst and working with multiple clients, and they look at me and go, well, how did you manage to do that? Because a lot of people are just retiring and going into it now, you know, and I think it's sort of the same type of concept, right? You just continue to do what you know to do. And away you go from there. What a show we've been having. Alvin, I've always enjoyed hanging out with you, whether I've seen you at a conference or if I'm in town and I managed to get the opportunity to get together with you and we just, our paths happen to cross. It's always excellent. If you, say in 10 or 15 seconds or 20 seconds, you have a final thought for our listeners?
Just always remember that life is only one time. We don't get many lives, unless you believe in reincarnation. So just think about that. Focus on the idea you got one life. What you do with it is absolutely everything, and you are the one who ultimately controls the end result.
Awesome. Great, great, great message. Alvin, thank you for hanging out with me today. I really
appreciate
it. Richard,
it's been a real pleasure, man. You're one of the good guys, and I'm very proud to be on your show.
Awesome. Thank you. And listeners, you know, thank you for tuning in, and I really appreciate it. And if you have a thought, a message, or maybe an idea for a guest, or just some questions, just send me a note at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And I want you to remember something. I think it's really important that you remember this: to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.